My castaway this week is the girl from Neasden who became a founding member of the Swinging 60s. With her fragile frame and wide eyes, she was promoted as the model of her age and propelled into the glamorous world of fashion and photography. Later, she found success as a singer and dancer and starred in Ken Russell's film The Boyfriend. These days, the teenage looks that had the cameras popping 20 years ago have matured into those of a successful actress who is also a wife and a mother. She is Leslie Hornby, better known as Twiggy. A name, Twiggy, which you don't much care for anymore.
Well, I mean, it's such a silly name, isn't it? I've been through all the thing of, I'm going to change it. And, you know, you do a show and you say to the producer, right, can I use my real? And they kind of look at you like, well, nobody will know who Leslie... Well, now I'm Leslie Lawson, but... So I think I'm Twiggy. Maybe Twiggy Lawson. At least that sounds like a human being.
Leslie Lawson, actually.
That's a great name, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think I'll be Twiggy forever.
I think you might be.
I think I'm stuck with
it. Where did it come from?
My manager, way back in those early days, Justin DeVerna, he had a brother. And he was my boyfriend, Justin, also at the time. And his brother, Tony, used to tease me. Because I was 16, I was very young, and I was really skinny. And Tony used to call me Sticks because of my legs. And I used to get furious. And Sticks turned into Twiggy, and Twiggy stuck. I'm lucky Sticks didn't stick, didn't
I? Justin de Villeneuve is also quite a name to conjure.
Well, that wasn't a real one. He changed that.
What was his name?
Nigel Davis. But he was Justin when I met him. I think he decided that he wanted a French name.
Well, you need never hear the name Twiggy again, because we're going to cast you away, so there'll be nobody else on the island to say it. Now, you'll have your music and you'll have your memories, but I presume you're going to hate every minute of it.
I can't bear being on my own. Can't I take my husband and my daughter?
Certainly not. But you take your music. Now, let's have the first one. What have you chosen?
Well, The Laughing Policeman by Charles Penrose, because it's the first song I remember being madly in love with. I must have been all of, 5 or 6 years old. So I'd have to have that to remind me of my childhood.
I know a fat old policeman, he's always on our street. A fat and jolly red-faced man, he really isn't green. He's too fine for a policeman, he's never known to frown. And everybody says he is the happiest man in town. He laughs upon point you need, he laughs upon you mean. He laughs at everybody when he's walking in the street. He never can stop laughing, he says he's never tried. But once he did arrest a man and laughed until he cried.
The Laughing Policeman, sung by Charles Penrose. It is the most terrible.
It does make you hysterical, but that would cheer you up. I mean, if you're feeling really down, you put that on it.
Well, any of those. Do you remember there was the runaway train went down the trashy blue.
And I love to go wandering, foldery, that one.
That's
remember,
right,
the
that's
Happy
right.
Wanderer.
And the ugly duck there once was an ugly duckling.
And my other favourite, which I nearly picked, was the Swedish Rhapsody. Dun da 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 da
da da da da. They're all lovely. So you were born and bred in Neasden. And what did you have in mind for yourself then, as your future?
Well, when I was very little, I think I probably wanted to be something like a ballet dancer, like all it. Not that I ever did ballet. Except I was terribly shy, and my mum tried to take me to dancing class, and I ran out screaming. She tried to take me to brownies, and I ran... So, I mean, that was the end of that. So how I ever ended up doing what I do is quite amazing, because I was so shy.
But who were your heroes and heroines?
Well, as I got into my teenage years, Jean Shrimpton was my female idol. I had her all over my walls. And I think the secret dream, although I never spoke of it to anyone, because I hated what I looked like, I was... so insecure. I was teased at school for being so thin. And I think the dream was, oh God, to be a model like that would be amazing. Never dreaming that I could even attempt it.
Then along came Justin Davina.
That's right.
Where did he come from? How did you meet him?
I had a Saturday job at my sister's hairdressing, where my sister worked in Bayswater, which was great because I got £1 a day. It was fabulous. I'd go up with her on Saturday.
What, to do the shampoo?
Yeah, shampooing, sweeping up the hairpins. It was wonderful. I loved it. And Justin's brother worked downstairs in the men's barbers, and he used to come in. And I was about 15 and a half when I first met him. And he was ever so funny and charming. And anyway, I went out with him a few times.
So at what point did he turn to you and say, you know something, I'm going to make you a star?
Well, he didn't. It didn't happen like that. I mean, he was very influential in clothes, and he took me to Bieber's, which I didn't know about, and I discovered that. And then he had a friend who worked on a magazine. And she said to me, why don't you come in and meet my editors? And I went along to meet them, and the woman said, well, you know, I'd like to do some headshots, but you'll never make a model because you're too small and too thin, which I was. If I'd have gone to an agency, you see, they wouldn't have taken me because I was under minimum height and much thinner than the minimum measurements. So they took the pictures, and to do the pictures, I had to have my hair done. And they sent me to Leonard, and that's how it all clicked, because Leonard, unbeknownst to me, went downstairs and called Barry Latigan, who took that famous headshot with the short hair. And Deirdre McSharry in the Daily Express saw it and asked to meet me. And I didn't even know what an interview was at that time. I just met this very nice lady. We had tea, and she talked to me about my life and what I wanted to do, and said, I'm going to write a little thing in the paper about you. And 2 weeks later, it was the double page in the Express saying, I named this girl the face of 66. So that was that. So I had to ask my dad if I could leave school. And he, being very wise, because I was only 16, you see, and bless his heart, he let me, and he drew out all his savings out of the bank, which was £100, to give me so I could get some new clothes, which was terribly sweet. Gave us his car so I could get to jobs. I mean, he was wonderful, and went to work on the train. He was amazing. So sweet. And said, but Justin's got to go with you everywhere. Because he was a carpenter in the film business, so I think, he knew about, you know, these bloody photographers, you know, my daughter. He's from Lancashire, my dad. Sorry about the accent, Dad. And so he said, Justin's got to go along and look after you, which is why he became my manager.
Let's pause there and have another record.
Well, I had to have a Beatles record, obviously, and I think my favourite one of all is Paul McCartney's Yesterday.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be. Something wrong, now I long for yesterday.
Paul McCartney singing yesterday.
He has got the best voice, hasn't he? Great song.
It makes you cry.
Oh,
my
God, it just... I'd be in floods of tears, wouldn't I, on this island. I'd have to take lots of handkerchiefs.
Did you cry much in those heady days of the 60s, or was it all one big high?
It was quite hard work, actually. I mean, you know, because I was... With all the press and the, you know, ta-da, you know, that was going on with me, which I didn't arrange, that just happened. I was also a day-to-day working model, and models work very hard. You know, you're up at 7 and you've got to look good. It's no late night. I mean, people think it's all parties, but real professional working models don't live that life, or if they do, it doesn't last very long. You have to be in bed, you have to have 8 to 10 hours. You work all day, you're absolutely exhausted by the end. The last thing you want to do is, well, I certainly didn't, was go out partying.
But Justin took care of everything. He took care of all the arrangements, the negotiations, the money.
And, you know, obviously we had our differences eventually, as one would. You know, I was very young when I met him. And but I will always thank him for protecting me, because there's a lot of sharks out there.
Do you ever see him now?
We hadn't seen each other for about 10 years. And that when I was in New York doing My One and Only, which was a musical I did on Broadway, he called me. And I heard this very nervous voice at the other end, and I knew who it was. And I said, oh, that's nice. I think he wasn't sure how I'd react. And we had tea together. So it was nice. We kind of spoke again. But I haven't seen him for a couple of years, actually. When drifts apart.
So the overwhelming impression one has, though, Twiggy, is that you are a survivor. I mean, unlike so many people in the 60s, you didn't... in the end, fall foul of anything, of drugs?
No, I didn't, actually. I think I'm probably the only person that I know from that era that didn't, actually. I don't know, I mean, it was always around, and other people did, but I don't know, it always frightened me. It's like when I was pre that era, when I was like a young teenager at school, it was the mods and the rockers, and I was a mod, and we used to go to the dance halls, and, you know, and that was the era of Purple Hearts and all those sort of things. And I never touched them. I wouldn't have dreamt of it. I don't know. It used to frighten the living daylights out of me.
Let's have another record.
Right. Well, this one is so beautiful. It's Albinoni's Adagio in G minor for strings and organ. And it's absolutely lovely. And I'll burst into tears again, probably.
Tommaso Albinoni's Adagio in G minor for strings and organ, played by the Chamber Orchestra of Jean-François Payard. Twiggy, you don't look it, but are you heavier today than you were then?
Yes, in a word.
How much?
I don't know. I'm probably about just over 8 stone's a good weight for me now. I'm a bit over that, actually. I'm about 8 stone 3 or 4.
And what were you then?
In the early days, I was 6 and a half.
Gosh,
so too thin. But you know, I was just young and underdeveloped. I used to eat like a horse. Terrible things. I mean, I eat much healthier things now.
But do you have to worry? Have you ever had to worry about diet and weight?
I don't think I'd ever get enormously fat. Or maybe I would, I don't know. But I do notice if I eat too many puddings, which I love, and chocolate. I only have a piece of chocolate about once every 2 months now.
That it kind of goes,
you know, to the places you don't want it to go, like your stomach or your thighs.
What about fashion? Are you still as obsessed with fashion?
I love clothes, and I've got favourite designers, and, you know, if I'm going anywhere, you know, I go along to the Emmanuels or something, and if we've got to get very dressed up, which is fun occasionally. It's fun playing the
But it hasn't remained an obsession.
No, I think once you have a child, that becomes the obsession, doesn't it?
Well, now, a big change occurred in your life, didn't it, in 1970, when you were still 20.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are still waiting for the first thing to happen, but you'd already hit it big. You met Ken Russell.
Tell me
what happened.
Well, I met him a few years before. He was a friend, and we hadn't actually seen each other for, I don't know, 6-8 months. And we had a dinner, and the night before, Justin and myself had been to see the revival of The Boyfriend on stage in London. So over dinner, we were telling Ken all about it. And through the dinner, we were all chatting. And Ken, towards the end of the evening, after we'd all had quite a lot of champagne, said, "Oh, great, I'd love to direct a musical. Why don't I do the film of it? And you can play Polly Brown and be the star." And we all said, "Oh, what a great idea," laughing, ha, 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 went home. He didn't really think about it anymore. And he rang me the next day and said, "You know, I've been thinking, that's not a bad idea. What do you think?" I said, "Well, you must be mad. You know, I'm a model. I can't act. I can't sing or that." He said, "But what do you think? If I can get it together, would you do it?" So I said, "But nobody's going to put the money up for me," which proved very true. I mean, he went, MGM owned it. And they were thrilled that he wanted to do it. You know, he was quite a hot director. He was quite new and hot, and he'd done Women in Love and things like that. And so they wanted him. When he mentioned me, they said, you know, no way, quite understandably. But God bless his heart, and I love him for it forever. He fought for me for 6 months. And after 6 months, they said, "All right, you know, just, just keep you quiet. Go ahead and be on your head if she's bad." So he came back to me and said, "Right, we've got the deal. We're going to do it." And I said, "But, you know, I can't sing or dance, Ken. You must be mad." They said, "Right, you've got 9 months. I'm doing The Devils," which was another film he did. "Go off to class." So I went off to class.
And you learned?
I learned, and it was absolutely petrifying, but it was wonderful. I mean, and it changed my life.
So Twiggy, the actress, the musical star, was born.
Yeah, kind of.
And you've done more and more of that since. But now you look for less of the all singing, all dancing stuff, and for the what one might describe as meatier roles.
I do get offered lots of things that I just don't want to do that are either too similar to things I've done before or just not right. So what I've tried to do is to build up a kind of log of work, and the more dramatic things I can get offered, the better.
And you've just been playing Charlie Chaplin's mother,
isn't
that right?
That was wonderful, and I was absolutely thrilled to be offered that, because it's 3 hours, and probably in the first 15 minutes I look okay, and the rest of it I look absolutely dreadful, because they were so poor, and she and the children had malnutrition, went to the workhouse, she ended up in an asylum. It's terribly sad.
Let's have the fourth record.
It's from Bellini's opera called Norma, and it's the piece is Mira or Norma. Thank you.
Mira O'Norma from Bellini's Norma, sung by Joan Sutherland and Montserrat Caballé. Did all that success bring you immediate happiness, or were there times when you were really very depressed and brought down by it?
I don't get very depressed, really. I mean, I've had times of tragedy in my life, as everybody has, when you feel very low. But I don't think I'm a moody person. I always tend to kind of carry on and the early times, I wonder if I was, as I say, I was working very hard, travelling a lot. I sometimes got quite tired, as one does.
So the boyfriend was a great success. What happened immediately after that?
I got offered various things. I did a series for the BBC, just a variety thing. I used to sing and dance and have guests on. But it was very good for me, because it was, the hardest thing for me is I had to kind of train in front of the public. You know, I couldn't go off somewhere and do it quietly. That's the hardest thing about being well known. It'd be quite nice to be able to go off and join a rep and do it secretly, so that if you do fall on your face, nobody knows.
But do you suffer from nerves, or do you really just press the button, Mark Twiggy, and just go out there and be yourself? Is that how you succeed?
2 minutes before you go out, you think, what am I doing here? I must be mad. I hope the theatre burns down. I wish everyone would go away and I can go home. But you don't. The curtain goes up, you go out, you do it. Mm. And I grew to love it, actually. I mean, you're always a little bit nervous, but the adrenaline gets you out there. You learn the different audiences and how to work them and what to do when you fall over or when a piece of scenery doesn't come out. I mean, you know, all those things that you learn that you couldn't go anywhere to learn but by being out there and doing it.
Your fifth record.
Well, this is a lady called Ruth Etting singing 10 Cents a Dance.
I work at the palace ball, but see that palace is cheap. When I get back to my chilly hall room, I'm much too tired to sleep. I'm one of those lady teachers, a beautiful hostess, you know, behind the palace features, at exactly a dime a throw. 10 cents a dance, that's what they pay me. Gosh, how they weigh me down. 10 cents a dance, panties and rough guys. Tough guys to tear my gown. 7 to midnight, I hear drums. Loudly the saxophone blows. Trumpets are breaking my eardrums. Customers crush my toes. Sometimes I think I found my hero, but it's a queer romance. All that you need is a ticket. Come on, big boy, 10 cents a dance.
Ruth Etting singing 10 cents a dance. It's very much your era, that, isn't it?
She's amazing, isn't she? She's actually one of my favourite singers. Because a lot of the ladies from that period, it's all very shrill and high and soprano. They're all up there, which is, you know, sweet. But she somehow had such soul, and she always makes your heart pound. She's, her songs are so sad, and that's a great song, 10 Cents a Dance.
Now, you lived and worked in the States for 8 years, in New York and in Los Angeles. How did it compare with London for living?
Well, London's my favourite because it's my home. But I think when you go into this business, whether it be planned or not planned the way I went into it, you have to be open to working all around the world, because our business is that, and certainly in America, because that's especially for films and much television.
Yes, but it's quite a brave thing to do for somebody who is essentially very English and quite a homebird.
Yeah, I'm amazed they can understand me, don't you? They often think I'm Australian, which always makes me laugh.
But did you get bored with being treated as a novelty by them?
Certainly since doing the Broadway show, it suddenly, when I did that and proved that I could go on 8 times a week and put bottoms on seats, to put it politely, it suddenly changes your, you know, that kind of Twiggy thing from the 60s became further in the distance, and the fact that I could probably do other things. became accepted.
Did you impress yourself with what you turned out to be capable of doing?
No, what was nice for me, because my huge fear, which is why I said no at first, was going out in front of an audience. I'd done a little bit here, I'd done a pantomime, you know, but that's much more. I mean, Broadway's Broadway, that's scary. I had to kind of, in my mind, pretend that I was like on a stage in, I don't know, in Streatham or something. I couldn't tell myself it was New York, you know, because that frightens you to death.
Well, now, you married an American, Michael Whitney, mm-hmm. and you had a daughter, Carly. Yeah. Named after Carly Simon.
Yes, that's right.
Does she prefer England, because you live back here now?
She does, yeah, at the moment. But I think, you know, children are very adaptable. She can't really remember that much about America. She was very little when we were there. Although she remembers New York and my doing the show.
She's 10 now.
She's 10.
There's quite a mother hen side to you, isn't
it? Oh, yeah. I think, you know, as soon as you have a child, everything in your life changes. You get all your perspectives right. Everything else, you know, because I mean, my career is important. Obviously, I like to work and I need to work. You know, we all got to live, and one kind of gets used to living in a certain way. So one has to enough to keep in that, you know, mold. But number one, whenever a script comes through, it's my first thought is, oh, where is it taking place? Will I have to leave Carly? You know, that's the first thought is Carly. Mm. Of course, yeah, I'm a mum.
Well, now, the big 4-0 beckons in September. Do you think you might have another baby before we run out of time?
Might, don't know. Be nice, wouldn't it?
All right, another record. It's number 6 now.
This one is beautiful. It's Rodrigo's guitar concerto, the adagio from that piece.
The Adagio from Rodrigo's guitar concerto, played by John Williams with the Philharmonia Orchestra, conducted by Louis Frémaux. We ought to hear, Twiggy, just a bit about Lee Lawson, who's rather run through this programme with us, your new husband. I understand you met by accident.
Well, Lee always says that Jesus brought us together. And you kind of see everyone's eyes think, oh, gosh, another religious nut. But it was in the form of Robert Powell, who's a dear mate of both of ours. And I'd just come back from living and working in New York. The show was over. And many things in my life had changed. I lost my husband when I was doing the show in New York, which was very sad, but one lives through things like that. So Carly and I were alone and came back here, wanting to come home, but feeling very strange, because when you've been A, through that in your personal life, and B, working in a show 8 times a week, your whole life evolves around that show. But I chose to come back because I wanted to come back and see my parents. And it was lovely to be back, and I was doing some recording. And I'd been to see a show and went to a restaurant, and an actor friend who I'd worked with, Jonathan Price, was at another table with a group of friends, including Lee. And I'd met Lee once 10 years before. And we got up and said hello, and I remember thinking at the time, oh, God, you know, he's so lovely. And I'd seen Tess, you know, the film he did with Roman Polanski. A week later, I got a call from Robert Powell and Babs, his wife, saying, come to dinner. And when I got there, Lee was there, and I thought, oh, God, they're matching, you know. It was like, and we had a lovely dinner and talked and talked and talked. And about 3 days later, I was driving back from the new school I'd gotten Carly into. And we hadn't even discussed where we were living. We were living two streets away from each other. And he was walking down the street with a newspaper. He'd just been in the newspaper shop. So I slowed the car down, wound down the window and said, hello, do you want a cup of tea? And he looked up. So I actually did pick him off the street. But what was nice about it is we were both completely free. He was on his own. He'd been split from his relationship for 2 years. I was totally on my own. I was in my mid-30s. He was in his late-30s. And that's very unusual. I think, you know, I do think somebody up there had something to do with it. Although I joke about Jesus. Maybe I shouldn't joke about it.
And then he took you by surprise some months ago and whisked you off to the United States and married you.
Yes. It was great. It was terribly romantic and wonderful.
You're a very lucky lady.
I am, aren't I?
Let's have another record.
Francis Russell, On My Own from Les Miserables.
In the rain, the pavement shines like silver. In the light, I'm misty in the river. In the darkness, the trees are full of starlight. And all I see is him and me forever and forever. And I know it's only in my mind, and I'm talking to myself and not to him.
Francis Ruffel singing On My Own from Les Miserables. Well, Twiggy, we've nearly come to the end, and I haven't asked you any of those island questions about building shelters and being practical and killing things. Can you do any of it?
Oh, God, killing things. I'd find that real. But I suppose if you're starving, you'd... Well, there'd be berries, wouldn't there? And
possibly.
I mean, I'm not a vegetarian, that's not fair to say, but we eat fish and chicken and... So, I don't know about killing. Oh, that'd be so hard.
And could you build a shelter or build a raft?
Yeah, I think I might. I'm quite practical, actually. I do make clothes. That's one thing that's kind of left over from wanting to be a designer. So, I can sew and I can... I always thought if I ever got put in jail for anything, please God, I don't. But if I did, as long as they give me material and a sewing machine and some cotton, I'll be fine.
Mail bags for Twiggy. But you'd be praying for escape.
Oh, yes.
Not from the prison, from the island.
No, I know. Oh, absolutely. No, Lee would come and find me. He'd come in a yacht or a
white
or
liner.
A canoe. He'd be my knight in shining armour. He is my knight in shining armour.
If you had to define the secret of your success, what would you say? Would you say that it was a lot of talent and a dollop of luck? Or is it sheer hard work, or is it that you were simply the right person in the right place at the right time?
I think it's a mixture of all those. I think initially the timing was right on the nose. You know, if it had been 2 years before, it wouldn't have happened. 2 years later, it wouldn't. So luck and fate in that degree then. I think the fact that I've hung in this long. Hopefully there is some talent there. And also a lot of hard work. It's hard work. I think a lot of people who aren't in this business don't realise what hard work it is. And I think actors and actresses and performers or anybody in this business work very hard. You have to. And it's great. It's very good for you. Hard work never killed anybody, my mum always said.
Your last record.
Ah, this is lovely. This is by the Furies. I Will Love You Every Time. It's so romantic. This is for Lee.
Every time I hear a sweet word to you, I think of you and I, my love, think of you and I. And when I hear you, I hang my head and cry, love, hang my head and cry. I will love you, I will love you, when we are gone. I will love you, I will love you.
I Will Love You Every Time by the Furies. Now you have to choose one of those which you would like to have more than any of the others.
I think it's got to be Yesterday by Paul McCartney, because it's so romantic and it just conjures up so many things, and he's such a wonderful writer and such a lovely man. It's got to be that.
And a book. Have you chosen a book?
Yes. Tess of the D'Urbervilles by Thomas Hardy.
Why do you want that?
It's just my favourite book. I read quite avidly. I'm a very slow reader, so I probably could have read many more books had I read faster, but I don't. And I don't know, I just think it's one of the most beautiful books ever written. It always makes me cry. I'm going to be in floods. I'm going to have loads of handkerchiefs on this eye. I'm going to be in floods of tears.
Perhaps for your luxury, you should have an endless supply of... What shall it be, your luxury?
It's got to be a huge... I mean, the biggest pot of cold cream we can find, because I've got really dry skin. And I'll shrivel up without it. Then when Lee comes to rescue me, I'll be like a prune.
A shriveled Twiggy. That was great fun. Twiggy, thank you very much indeed for letting us see your debut.
Thank you, I really enjoyed it. It was smashing.